This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Look, I messed it up. Please keep
right
that in.
Right out the gate.
Please.
Right out the gate.
What did I say?
You said nerd. Like you ate your tongue.
I don't know why, though, because I had the nerd part right. You think that would be the weird.
I think
that
you didn't trust yourself. You have to go through.
What I've said this. I've said this name so many. I helped come up with this name. Nerdificent.
Yeah.
Nerdificent. Right. Welcome to Nerdificent. I am one of your hosts, Danny Fernandez, and across from me.
Pounding a muscle milk is your boy Iffy Waddy Way. Look, I'm real hyped. You know how stuff works, West. We finally got muscle milks in the fridge. Anna, super producer Anna, was trying to say who wanted this. Who wanted a 100 calorie, 20 gram of protein?
People are
going
to think that we're getting paid for this, and I really hope that we are.
No, we're
Anna,
not.
Can you make that work?
We're not.
Muscle milk.
No, look, if we're going to get protein sponsorship, I want Optimum Nutrition or IsoPure. Hit us up. I will do it. You know, speaking of nutrition, I was thinking about this the other day. We got to have Nerd Strong on so we can talk about like nerdy fitness.
Oh, I would love to.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of doubles over with our cosplay episode. We were talking about some professional cosplayers that like they're just in the gym for like 12 hours getting ripped because that's a part of their life is that they get hired actually represent those super buff anime characters.
Yeah. I know it's crazy. Also, I used to see Julian all the time at Real Life Trunks because I used to go to the Golds down the street. The one downtown that's 5 minutes from 5 minutes from my house, finally upgraded, got new Olympic squat racks. I'm there now.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's nothing like having a good gym 5 minutes away.
That's my gym. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know where Winston Duke, M'Baku himself, he lives by me. And I know what gym he works out at. And I'm not going to tell anyone because.
Okay, but let me know so I can go in there and flex on you. Let me be like, I'm going to show you the real man ape right now.
Oh. I thought it was so funny, too, that I'm like, oh, man, I thought he'd be at, like, a really private gym so he's not bothered
he's
by
not
people.
He's not there. Like, the weekend Black Panther came out, I watched him jump from, like, 6,000 followers
too.
To, like, it was interesting watching because I remember I checked one day to follow him. And then when I came back the next day, I was like, man, that's how much you grow when you get in a movie like that.
What are we doing messing around? Everyone's like, oh, you need to be working on your social media. And it was he had like 2,000 followers, booked that role. And now he's at like 100,000 or probably almost a million.
Even like Daily Zeitgeist, when I go on there, I get like at least anywhere from like 20 to 50, which I'm like, why aren't y'all already following me? I've been on Daily Zeitgeist many times. Y'all ain't already following the kid? Okay, cool. I'll come back on it many times I need to get
I need to catch up to you and Jamie. I was just on there and Jack introduced me as being, he was like, I think this is like her sixth time or 10th time. I'm like, this is my third.
Yeah, no, that's me, Jamie, and Edgar doing big numbers. I remember after Edgar's, I think, second or third appearance, I emailed Dan and I was like, you got to get me back on. I can't have Edgar putting more numbers up.
I would like 2 to 3 times a month if possible.
This has been great promo for the How Stuff Works brand.
And Muscle Milk and Isopure.
Oddly enough, it all has to do with this topic.
No,
today.
It doesn't.
Well,
no,
you know, because I feel like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they are swole. Like, you know, the toys, they were swole and...
Iffy, they have the worst diet plan, so no.
Yeah, but they're mutants, so they can eat as much pizza as they want and still have that six-pack that they're rocking with.
Oh, they do. I think that's their shell, though.
Well, no, because the soft bottom, that soft... Have you ever rubbed the bottom of a turtle?
Mm-hmm. It's hard. That's part of their show. I mean, it is. It's hard and soft.
Yeah, it's not as hard as the top, but it is pretty hard. But that's how swole they are, that it rips through that part, too. But Ninja Turtles is tight. When did you get into Ninja Turtles?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to upload this on our social media, and it's going to be a picture of I think both my brothers and I were all turtles, but I do remember my mom, she was super into making our costumes, poor. Basically, and so she had turned these green salad bowls. I know you guys can't see, but if he just spit out his Muscle Milk, she turned these salad bowls and she like strapped them on our back. I love my mom.
That was actually one of the first real costumes I remembered having was a Ninja Turtle costume, because my dad, his thing, he was also super cheap. And he would have me be an African prince every year. And all that was I would just wear my traditional Nigerian clothes, like no crown. He wouldn't even buy the plastic crown. I would just wear my Nigerian clothes. He was like, you are an African prince now. I was like, oh, this is so whack.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Ugh.
But Ninja Turtles was huge in my house. We had the bed sheets. We had the toys. Definitely for Halloween, I think multiple times. Watch the show.
My lane, like, I loved Ninja Turtles, but my big lane was Street Sharks, baby. Jawsome.
Yes.
You know, pizza, burgers is what we like. Real line from that show.
Oh, Street Sharks.
Yeah, but I loved them both equally. I loved all my sons equally. Street Sharks, and they had the dinosaurs. Their whole big thing was they were trying to start global warming because they were cold-blooded. You know, lots of fun stuff. All right, I think we dilly-dallied long enough. Let's just do the deep dive. How did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles start, Danny?
They first appeared in a comic book published by Mirage Studios in 1984 in Dover, New Hampshire, created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, which... Mirage Studios was actually a joke. They didn't have a studio. It was just Laird's living room.
Oh, that's great.
They were two struggling artists living in Northampton, Massachusetts, when they came up with the Turtles in November of 1983. So basically, as a joke, Eastman, like, they were brainstorming together one night, and Eastman drew a turtle standing on its hind legs, wearing a mask with nunchucks strapped to its arms, and he wrote Ninja Turtle on the top of it. And Laird laughed and then drew a more refined version of that. And not to be outdone, Eastman then drew 4 turtles, each armed with a ninja-style weapon. And then Laird, like, outlined the group shot in ink, which we're going to include in our notes. I'll probably tweet this out. It's, like, the actual first ever image that they made of them. And they added Teenage Mutant to the top, and they made the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. And then they used the money from Eastman's $500 tax refund together with a $1,300 loan from his uncle and $200 from Laird's empty bank account. And they both self-published a single-issue comic intended to parody 4 of the most popular comics in the early 80s, which were Daredevil, New Mutants, Cerebus, and Frank Miller's Ronin.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So, like, the Turtles and Daredevil actually have a lot of similarities. They have the same origin story.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you know. So, in Daredevil, number one, so Matt Murdock sees a truck. It's about to hit an old man. He goes to knock this guy out of the way. The truck swerves, and, like, a barrel, like, filled with a radioactive substance falls on him, blinds him, and then gives him superhuman senses. That's a very common, I feel like, having some chemical fall on you. Alex Mack. And then the Turtles have the same scenario, except the barrel hits a boy's head, like the canister hits a boy's head, and then smashes into, like, a bowl of baby turtles who then fall with this canister into an open manhole. Splinter, their adoptive rat father and sensei, finds them, and they are all turned into human-sized heroes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That, I know. I almost want to imagine they're in the same universe.
And oh, I that, love that.
And that those two events are what kind of spawned them both.
There's actually more connection to Daredevil, which we'll get into. But yeah, it was kind of just this fun. There's always been a lot of humor in, or at least some humor in the Ninja Turtle comics. And that has like changed over time. But yeah, it's always been like a parody of other Marvel properties.
Yeah. So with their combined money, Eastman and Laird printed 3,000 copies of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and bought a single ad in the Comics Buyer's Guide magazine. And because of that ad, they sold all 3,000 copies within a few weeks and had thousands more orders coming in. And then by January 1985, they completed issue number 2 and had orders for 15,000 copies, and distributors wanted 30,000 copies of issue number 1. So it was definitely one of those smash hit moments where it's like, oh, this fun idea, which I now call the Beastie Boys effect, because, you know, the Beastie Boys did a rap album as a joke, and then that became who they were. They were originally a punk band.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy that they, like, made this fake studio, essentially, out of his living room. And then because their second issue did so well, people went back and ordered thousands more copies of their first issue.
Oh, yeah.
So they ended up staying under Mirage Studios from 1984 to 1995. That's 75 issues. And they also had a lot of miniseries and one-shots, too. Then they moved to Image Comics in 1996 for 13 issues. And this is kind of where things get a little dicey. Or I would say fans would say, like, not really canon.
Oh, so this was their GT, is
yes,
what you're saying.
This is their Dragon Ball GT era.
Yeah, because, like, a Splinter became a bat.
Yes.
Donatello became a cyborg. Leonardo lost a hand. And Raphael became the new Shredder.
How does that work?
I don't know, but I like that. Because Raphael was always the hothead. So that seems like it could go in there. Yeah, I'd say try that out in the newer runs. But basically, Laird and everyone else didn't consider those years Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then they came back to Mirage in 2001 and ran all the way until 2010.
Yeah, and then in 2011, IDW, which is a comic book publisher, they started running a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic with artwork from Eastman, but not who was the original co-creator, but not with his co-creator Laird involved.
So, you know, I guess before we jump into my favorite part, which were the movies, I think we, in the animated series, which is very interesting. Something I want to point out here is that the version, the first version of that we're talking about now, it was very adult. Like
it was
an adult. It was super violent. It was actually super cool. And the reason I point this out is because I discovered them obviously in the 90s with the movies, and when they were way more kid friendly with the animated series and the movie. But when I was at a comic shop, my mom got me the Ninja Turtle comics thinking it was about the same, and it was not. It was
PG-13 pushing it.
Yeah, I never even told her. I would just read them, and I was like, oh, this is.
They're saying damn.
Yeah, oh,
yeah, they would, like, slice people. Casey, who we'll get into as well, Casey Jones, like, was pretty violent. They had language that there's no way they would say on Nickelodeon now.
Yeah.
That was written by two young guys, like, you know, who read, like, that's how it is. That's how comics are, like Daredevil comics and other things like that. The Marvel comics are like that as well.
Also, it was the 90s, which was an extremely hyper-violent time in comics.
Right.
Like, just super dark and gritty and super, a whole bunch of belts with pockets in the belts and no one has arms, but they're super buff, puffed up chest, ready to rock and roll.
It was very dark and gritty, yeah. And so that's the comics version. So the version that we ended up know, that most of us know, like you said, the animated series definitely had to be dialed down a ton. And I also, the creators didn't really appreciate or agree with it, which we'll get into. But before we do, we should talk about the turtles.
Yeah, yeah. So the turtles are all named after Renaissance painters, and they just figured that it's just quirky enough to work with the idea of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So first, everyone has their favorite, but we're just going to go down this in no particular order. Leonardo, a.k.a. Leo, is the tactical courageous leader, devoted student of his sensei. Leonardo wears the blue mask and wields two katana. You know, you would think he, like, most, I feel like, standard favorite because he had two katanas. And as the most conscientious of the four, he often bears the burden of responsibility for his brother, which commonly leads to conflict with Raphael. Leonardo was named after the, we don't need to talk about it.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about
it. Michelangelo, the most stereotypical teenager of the team. He's very free-spirited, relaxed, he's goofy, he's a jokester, known for his love of pizza, as they all are, but he might be the most.
Oh, yeah.
He wears an orange mask, which we'll actually get into their masks because they changed. He wields a pair of nunchucks. I feel like you're right. I feel like a lot of people were Leo just because of his two katanas.
Yeah. I remember I specifically didn't like Michelangelo because the nunchucks. I was like, I don't want to use the nunchucks. Because remember, when we were that age, we picked the people who we would pretend to be. And you either wanted to be Donatello, Raphael, or Leonardo because they had the most. I knew a few Michelangelo heads, but definitely most people were Leonardo because he had the two swords. Not to mention when you had to play them at the Chuck E. Cheese four-player arcade.
All right. And then up next
is Donatello, the scientist, inventor, engineer, and technological genius, a.k.a. the nerd. Donatello wears a purple mask and wields a bow staff. Donatello is perhaps the least violent turtle, preferring to use his knowledge to solve conflicts, but never hesitates to defend his brothers.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like what, well, here's the king that I feel like most people, everyone has a different, you know, like, but I feel a lot of people gravitate towards Raphael.
Yep.
The known bad boy. Yep. Vegeta wears a red mask, wields a pair of Sai. It says he's aggressive in nature. I mean, yeah, but he's just cocky. Seldom hesitates to throw the first punch. And he's often depicted with a very pronounced New York accent, where as opposed to him, everyone thinks that they're like surfer dudes.
Yeah.
But I would say the surfer is mainly Michelangelo.
Yeah.
But they kind of all got that. You know, in other iterations of them, and especially in the movie, it's I think in the movie, actually, they're kind of all surfer dudes. But yeah. I'd have to read, at least the one that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and then their master is Splinter. It's the turtle sensei and adoptive father. Splinter is a Japanese mutant rat that learned the way of ninjutsu from his owner and master, Hamato Yoshi. In the 1987 TV series, Archie Comics series, and the 2012 TV series, Splinter was Hamato Yoshi mutated into a humanoid rat. But I liked the movie version where the rat was watching him train and was copying this tiny rat. it was so cute. I need to rewatch. I bet you it doesn't
should.
Hold up.
Well, yeah, and so to go back to the connection with Daredevil, so Splinter is like a parody or based on Matt Murdock's Sensei Stick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see that now. I see
and you
it.
Get it? Splinter?
Yeah.
Get the stick? Get it?
Oh.
Okay, and then we have my girl April O'Neil. So she was a former lab assistant to the mad scientist Baxter Stockman. And she's now a companion of the Turtles. There have been a couple of different iterations of her. Yeah, she was a television news reporter in the 2007 CGI film. Wasn't she a reporter in the original one, in the series?
Yeah, no, she's always kind of been a reporter. She definitely was a reporter in the movie. Yeah.
So April first met the Turtles when they saved her from Baxter's Mouser robots. And then she embarks on many Turtle adventures with them. And she does work in the public that the Turtles cannot. Because that might terrify people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Unless those few times when that happened in, like, the cartoons and comics where they wear trench coats.
Oh, yes.
And a hat. Like, you wouldn't notice. If you're wearing a trench coat and a hat,
you're noticeable.
Everyone's going to be looking at you. Then they're going to look at your face and like, yo, does that man's have a turtle face? Like, what's going on?
Oh, man. Well, you know what's so funny is I feel like now the world that we live in, it would be totally fine.
Oh, yeah. No, like, people would be like, oh, it's just a furry.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. Oh, they're just going to like Comic-Con or whatever.
Yeah, don't worry about them. The next guy up is going to be Casey Jones, a vigilante who wears a hockey mask to protect his identity. Casey Jones has become one of the Turtles' closest allies as well as a love interest to April. Casey first encountered the Turtles after having a fight with Raphael. He fights crime with an assortment of sporting goods he carries in a golf bag, such as baseball bats, golf clubs, and hockey sticks.
God. See, that's what they mean about it being originally like kind of violent.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he was going hard with those weapons.
Yeah, and I feel like he became a fan favorite, too, like when he appeared, a lot of people latched on to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you throw a hockey mask on somebody, they're going to go hard in the paint.
And then we got the main man, Shredder. He's a villainous Master Oroku Saki. He's a villain. He's the leader of the Foot Clan, again, going back to Daredevil, which is a play on the Ninja Clan in Daredevil, The Hand. Yes. Now they named it the Foot Clan.
That's so great.
It is. It really is. All things that I never knew when I was little. he's the arch enemy of Splinter and the Turtles. And he prefers to use his armor instead of weapons in some versions of him.
Oh, yeah. And there's other famous villains, but, you know, we're running on time. We're going to have a guest on the next half. So why don't we just jump ahead? We can talk about villains, but we know what you're here for. You want to hear about us talk about the TV show, the movie, how it became kind of a kiddie show and how they felt about it. And we will get into that right after these messages.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we are back, and we're here to talk about everything past just who they are. We're going to talk about their legacy, but, you know, oftentimes when, you know, things like the Ninja Turtles are talked about, they're often mentioned that it's a show made to sell toys, but, you know, it's like who came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah, do you feel like people say that about
it? Oh, yeah, I've heard people say that about that. Transformers, like all those, like,
right.
G.I. Joes, like, yeah. These are just shows to sell toys.
But... Well, Iffy, you are exactly correct. I'm not kidding. Their show, I'm sorry to burst this bubble. Their TV show, the animated series that you grew up with and loved, was only made because they were trying to sell toys. Oh. For it. Like, I'm not kidding. So a licensing agent, Mark Freeman, he sought out Eastman and Laird, the two co-creators, and he proposed to them a wider merchandise opportunity. So basically the toys came first. They wanted to have the toys. And it's smart. Like, look at them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, having a set of turtles, like, they have nunchucks. They come with different accessories. So in 1986, Dark Horse Miniatures produced a set of 15 millimeter, so literally like half an inch, lead figurines. Yes, they were lead.
Oh, no.
Yep. And then in January 1987, Eastman and Laird visited the offices of Playmates Toys, which is a small California toy company that wanted to expand into the action figure market. So this is what happened. Development started between a creative team of companies and individuals, including Jerry Sachs, who's the advertising agent of Sachs Finley Agency. And they brought together animators from Murakami Wolf Swenson, which was headed by Fred Wolf, And the team combined concepts and ideas with the Playmates marketing crew. They brought on writer John Schulte, who helped them make a simple backstory that would live on the toy packaging for the entire run of the product and show.
Wow. I mean, it's funny. So they basically, it seems like they're like, all right, we want your turtles, but we're going to redo everything. Because for them to be writing a new backstory when, you know, the comics already had a pretty solid one.
Well, Playmates Toys, their demographic that they wanted for this was ages 4 to 8.
Ah.
So there's no way their PG-13 thing with the turtle slicing people and saying damn and stuff like that did not fit their target audience. So this is crazy. Playmates, the toy company, and their team essentially served as associate producers and contributing writers to the miniseries.
Oh, wow.
That was first launched to sell the action figures. Wow. So phrases like Heroes in a Half Shell, which is very popular, and some of their comical catchphrases like Turtle Power,
oh, yeah,
that actually came from their creative team.
Oh, wow.
It's just such like a, it's something that you and I know, and I think that we've all kind of been exposed to now, but when you're like, oh, no, they literally made the show to sell toys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a great show, and we all love it, but it's just like you're just pulling back the veil, pulling it back.
I mean, and if you think this is just a product of the like 80s, that it's still going on. Like that's why, what was it? Was it Young Justice or one of the recent Justice League shows that had like a great diverse cast, great characters? They canceled it because it wasn't selling enough toys.
Oh man, there's so many things. We at some of the channels that you and I host at, I'll get hit up about branded stuff, and it's like, hey, so and so wants to sell this. Do you have a show you can pitch to sell this? Oh man.
I mean, you know, that's that.
That's how it works. That's how it used to work.
That's why the perfect combination is being able to combine the two and still produce a good one.
It's really funny because there's so many things people don't know that was just made to sell something.
Oh, yeah.
And you would never know because same thing. They bring on a creative team or they have animators or whatever. And you have no idea that the whole pitch was like, hey, we need to sell this product.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get into the show itself. So on December 28th of 1987, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles' first cartoon series began, starting as a 5-part miniseries and becoming a regular Saturday morning syndicated series on October 1st of 1988. Your boy was born then. I was years old. and it had 13 more episodes than that. See, so here's something. In the comics, they all wore red masks, but for the animated series, they gave them different colors, which I'm sure often.
Toys.
Yeah, yeah.
Toys
made it. You know, you can't sell one toy with the same color
right,
mask.
Right, when they
know?
All look the same.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So with this show, Mirage Studios, again, which was now a legit studio,
yeah,
no longer just in the living room, they didn't own the rights to the cartoon series. So Eastman and Laird, they did actually have the final say on their creations. And they went along with it, but neither were happy about it. So their PG-13 comic was now turned into something that 5-year-olds could essentially watch.
Yeah.
The show placed a much stronger emphasis on humor than the comics do. Here we have our Ninja Turtles that are now like 4 wisecracking, like pizza-obsessed superheroes. As opposed to the dark,
yeah, like they were ninjas. It was very similar to Daredevil in the sense that they were urban ninjas and they were out there slicing people up to save the day. Mm-hmm. No longer. So in March 2012, Laird said that in his blog, among other things, there would have likely been no moronic henchmen like Bebop and Rocksteady.
People liked Bebop
and
Rocksteady.
I know, which is funny. Well, that's what's funny when it's your baby. Like, I feel like you get distanced and out of touch of, like, what's working. And even, like, if you don't like it, you don't care that it's popular. Like he probably still thinks it's dumb. But Bebop and Rocksteady, I do agree, they are a hit. The Shredder would have been seriously malevolent. April would not have been a reporter and constantly need to be rescued by the turtles.
I kind of like that.
I know, that's the
shade.
One take. That's the,
that's
the one take
he's throwing in there. Good.
And the turtles would not have been so ridiculously obsessed with pizza. And the Shredder would not have had as one of his businesses a restaurant called Ninja Pizza. Another valid complaint. And the show would not have had a joke or gag every 5 seconds.
You mean it wouldn't be like Deadpool?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know. It's funny because he's like, if I had my way with the show, it would have just been the animated comic. And it was like, cool, but it would not have been as smash of a hit.
Maybe now it would have, but not then.
I think it just comes to something I often find that, like, as cringy as it sometimes may be, the family-friendly route just has more staying power. It just really does. Having, like, if the animated series would have been like the comics, there is a chance that it would have been a short-lived series that was looked back upon like something like Akira, which is amazing in a artistic sense. But if you look at something like the Ninja Turtles, which is just a cash cow, which they get to keep getting that piece of pie. But that's the thing with art. When you're making really good art, you really don't care about the money.
Yeah. You know what? To me, it's like, well, I wonder if he was comparing himself to other comic book writers and artists that got to have actual, like, you know, I mean, it was originally, though, a parody of Daredevil, but Daredevil is so much more violent and weight. There's like actual weight to it. Maybe he's comparing it to that, even though the Turtles were a parody of, you know, actual comics.
Also, if you want to mention, like, there is an argument there that the current state of the Turtles are following the true spirit of what they were born out of, which was a joke. The Turtles didn't start off being serious. It was just this joke of like, look at this, look at this.
Yeah, look at this. And like, then you got money
and you're like, oh, now let's make our thing.
But I do like the fact that he said April wouldn't be constantly need to be rescued by the Turtles, which makes me think, like, I wonder if she could have had her own.
Oh, definitely.
You know, she could have been Elektra. So that series ran until 1996.
Yeah. And then the second animated series ran from 2003 to 2009. It was produced by 4Kids, same company, and co-produced by Mirage Comics, which means it was a little closer to the comics than the other show, darker and edgier like the 1987's cartoon. The series lasted until 2009, ending with a feature-length television movie titled Turtles Forever. I remember this run because this is about when I was in high school when it ended, and I remember Turtles Forever being like a big event for a lot of turtle heads.
Yeah, and then the third animated show ran from, this is the most recent one, 2012 to 2017. It was bought by Nickelodeon, and then that featured the new CGI Turtles, which I felt like were pretty well received.
Oh yeah, no, this one was very liked. This was people really enjoyed this series. And then Nickelodeon announced the fourth animated series, Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is going to air in September. And I've seen some early stuff. It looks pretty dope. And April O'Neil is black in this one.
Oh, that's dope. Yeah. And our friend Ben Schwartz is one of the voices. And should be noted, Rob Paulsen, who was in the original animated show, he voiced Raphael. Mm-hmm. He got to come back for the third animated series. And this time they switched him to Donatello.
Yeah, you know who did Raphael?
Was it Sean Astin?
Yep.
Oh,
Was, remember how I said Rob Paulsen did Talking Tunes at the Improv? That was the episode I was there when he had Sean Astin in.
Oh, damn. And they were talking about, he's the nicest man.
Yeah.
I met him at Erewhon, which is a very fancy grocery store here. And he was friends with my ex-boyfriend, and was very kind and polite, and also made a joke about how I could do better. So
that is funny. Yeah.
So the films.
Oh my gosh. So this is where my nostalgia kicks in, baby. What's funny about these films is that none of them did well critically. Zero.
But they all did good in our hearts.
Yeah. it was surprising to me because all of these were like Oscar worthy when I was a kid.
Oh my gosh.
And now going back, I'm like, oh, but funny enough, all these films made money. There was not a single flop, even though they were all critically panned, which I think goes back to, once again, the audience. If these movies were targeted towards adults, I think being critically panned would make it fail. But that's the cool thing with, once again, family-friendly movies is when your options are like A Quiet Place, you know, Saw 32, and like, you know, all this stuff, and you're like, what kid movie is out? You're gonna go see it no matter what. You're not gonna look at how it was rated.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny, Iffy, is I had no idea that people didn't like Batman and Robin until I grew up. No, until I moved here. Yeah. And like,
freeze.
And it was so great. Dude, his outfit, it was very much, it just was over the top. The set design, the costumes were over the top. I loved it as a kid. Loved it. Had the little glass, the glasses you could get like from Burger King or whatever. Mm-hmm. Loved Poison Ivy. Yep. I loved everything. Batgirl, like
Burger King used to be the plug for movie merch. Yes. I remember I had the sunglasses they gave out for Wild Wild West, real geeked because my mom got it for me on the way to Disneyland, and I was like, hell yeah, and I was rocking them all day, and then I went on Space Mountain, put it in my pocket, and it fell out.
Oh yeah,
it fell out of my pocket, so I was no longer a dope boy. But yeah, let's talk about the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle that came out in 1990. It starred Judith Hogue as April O'Neil, Elias Cotes as a hockey mask wearing vigilante Casey Jones, with the vocal talents of Corey Feldman as Donatello, Brian Tochi as Leonardo, Robbie Rist as Michelangelo, and Josh Pice as Raphael. The various creatures were created by Jim Henson's Creature Shop.
It was very cool. Yeah.
And while the film was panned by critics at the time of the release, fans dug the movie.
Kids.
It was a lot of fun. and it was turned into the highest grossing independent film of all time at the time. And so the budget was $13.5 million, and they made $202 million at the box office,
Dang.
Which is a nice come up.
Yeah.
So then the next year they released Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of Ooze. And that was 1 year after the events of the first film. Pizza delivery boy named Kino inadvertently encounters burglars on his route and tries to stop them. So this is the one where Shredder turns into Super Shredder at the end, and then he gets knocked into a trash can, and Kino, this guy who we just talked about, freaking goes oops and hits the trash compactor and kills this dude and murders Shredder in cold blood. Like, in a cute way. Like, oops.
I mean, yeah. But people die in kid films.
Oh, man. Hold on. No, that was... No. I think it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 1.
No, I think you were right.
The Shredder suit, by the way, in the 90s was mad clean. Yes! He goes in the trash machine. Yep. And he's like, in it? Yep. And Casey Jones goes, he whistles and he murders him in cold blood. You see his helmet get smushed. Yeah, no, he straight murdered it. You know, that was pretty dark.
It was, but there's so many. I mean, think of every Disney film ever.
Yeah.
Those are all dark.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because the fairy tales they were based off of were extremely dark.
That's true. That's true.
The Little Mermaid did not have a happy ending.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I don't think Snow White did either. My
bad for the Kino stans who just were up in arms for a second. They're like, oh, no, my man's Kino is cool, okay? So then that led to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, which...
They were just knocking these out.
Oh, yeah, because the first one was in the 90s. 2 was in 91.
Yeah.
And 3 was in 93.
God, this was like the height
of
Ninja Turtle love.
And so the second movie brought in 78 million, which isn't as much as the first one, but was still a come up. And then the third one, they went the Back to the Future 3 route, and the Ninja Turtles went back in the past. There was something about the 90s and the 3s being a time travel movie. It went back in the time to feudal Japan. All three of these were critically panned.
I want to read the reviews from this
time. That's why I was looking. I have one snippet from James Berardinelli, who gave it 1 out of 4 stars and said, any adults accompanying their kids will have to invent new and interesting ways to stay awake. Not only is this movie aimed at young children, the script could have been written by them. Mad burn.
Wow. But Mad also, burn. Yes, like it was aimed at young children.
I know.
And to me, it was successful if we still remember it.
No, and it, once again, this was another success with this time the...
Wait, can I read? TV Guide gave it 2 out of 4 stars and said in their review, if the time travel gimmick has to be employed twice in a row, then it's probably best to banish these characters to retirement sewer.
Wow.
You know, whoever wrote that thought they were being clever.
Oh, yeah. No, back then, that probably was that smoke. Okay. and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 4, which was the, it was the reboot in 2014 that also was critically panned, but this one I remember a few people being hyped about. I wasn't. I didn't like the design of the turtles. I think a lot of people thought they were weird, But in the end, with their budget of $125 million,
they
brought in $493 million.
That's because they had some heavy hitters with it, too. I remember Megan Fox was April.
Yeah.
I remember when they brought in Will Arnett.
Yeah.
Also, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
In it. Johnny Knoxville. Yeah. There were a bunch of people that were in it.
And it, yeah, I remember it, this, that's going to be another one that, you know, I feel like kids really enjoyed it. I think the fans who went back for nostalgia's sake did not like it. And I just didn't watch it. I've skipped so many reboots. I haven't seen the first Transformers because I did not like the design of it. Did not like the design of it. Did not like the design.
In my opinion, the best Transformers movie. Is the first one.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything after that, especially the latest ones, I won't say because I have a good rapport with Universal.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
did not at all like the design of it and skip that as well. So I'm
man,
real
that
good
was
at
when
skipping.
Shia LaBeouf, everybody really loved him.
No, I've after learning that skipping Dragon Ball Evolution was the best decision of my life, not having any images of that movie burned into my head, I was like, I'm just going to skip movies that need to be skipped.
All right. Well, I have some little known facts before we bring on our guests.
Okay.
So one of them is that Eastman and Laird, they were actually sued for $5 million by Buffalo Bob Smith. He was the host of the Howdy Doody show because he claimed they stole cowabunga from his program. So that word was first used as a catchphrase greeting of a Native American character named Chief Thunderthud. Oh, God. However, it had been adopted by surfers in the 1960s. It was very popular. I don't know if he came up with it, but whatever. And after a few months of going back and forth, they actually did end up giving him $50,000.
Oh, my gosh.
So you can sue it. Didn't we talk about this before? You can sue anyone for anything.
Yeah, basically. In addition to the American series, the Japanese exclusive two-episode anime original video animation, a.k.a. OVA, was made in 1996, titled Mutant Turtles Shoujin Densetsuhin. The OVA is similar in tone to the 1987 TV series and uses the same voices from TV Tokyo's Japanese dub of the 1987 TV series. The first episode was made to advertise the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Super Mutant toys, once again, made for toys.
Yeah.
It featured the turtles as superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all for toys.
All for toys. And yeah, I think those are some fun facts, and we'll get into some more fun stuff when we come back and we talk to our guests. So why don't you stick around and listen to what these fine folks have to say on this break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of. A degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Thank you. And we are back, and we are joined by comedian, actor, writer Eric Barnes.
Hello.
Thanks for joining. So you wrote a really funny Ranker article. That was why I hit you up to be on this, and it was the 16 worst Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle villains that nobody cared about.
Yeah.
How did you come up with this?
I came up with it a combination of pitching and just I'm just a big Ninja Turtles nerd, and I knew that. Especially the 80s cartoon, it's so cheesy that there was a lot of terrible villains out there that were that many fans, they're deep pulls.
Yeah, we were talking about that because funny enough, the fighting show, the new fight choreographer I have, he actually is Kevin Eastman's a trainer. He's the one who got him to do. And so I was talking about how we did this podcast, how we were talking about Ninja Turtles and how they weren't
working together?
Well, just their visions were different when it went to there.
Yeah.
And he was saying that, Eastman was saying that he like learned a lot about business from that deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because just the licensing, the deal just could have been better. They still, you know, made a good amount of money, but it could have definitely been better.
God, I feel like that's most people's story.
Oh, yeah.
When they make it. Or whatever, is they're finding out like, oh, I'm going to give this over. And now my superhero is super into pizza. And that's a thing that I don't
like. Well, look, the cool thing about at least Ninja Turtles as a property is that Eastman was able to like redirect his own version and vision of what the thing he created could be. And then, you know, Playmates had their own thing for the toys. And now Nickelodeon has their own version. And
I think arguably it would not have been as big as it did without that bad deal.
Yeah.
Like the bad, because I think if the TV show would have been like this dark, gritty, like the direction they were going in, it would not have went anywhere.
Right.
But the way that it was built in this model that we're learning like two decades in that can be rinse repeated almost forever. So you get more longevity out of it versus just going with like your truest vision. And then now, so many people know about Ninja Turtles that you can do a new comic run that is that original dark, gritty boot and still have the licensing checks coming in for the kids' versions that are
made. Ninja Turtles for anybody.
Yes.
Like whether you're 30 or a teenager or like 5 years old.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
I would like if they did in the style of Batman, the animated series, but with the Ninja Turtles.
Ooh, that was good.
Why? Wouldn't that be good?
Then need to see the 2003 series.
Oh, is that
on Fox? Yeah, because it was a good hybrid of a lot of the original Eastman storylines, along with it being a little bit kid friendly. Like Shredder gets beheaded in that one. Granted, it's just a shadow, and Shredder turns out to be an Ultron, which is just a version of Krang inside of his stomach. So it was a robot head, but still.
Oh yeah,
that's not your typical Saturday morning flair.
Is that the one that introduced Venus?
No, that was like a live action sort of Saban. That's when they were teamed up with Saban for like a Power Rangers type.
Oh yeah, the crossover. Show.
Oh, yeah, no, Venus. Yeah. The Venus came in on one of the newer reboots of the cartoons. That's when they came in. Yeah, she was a female turtle.
Too?
She was the female turtle.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're all named after. Like they've got hella. They got super meta, and they were like, we're all named after, you know, these great artists. We got to think of something. Venus de Milo. Venus, which still logically doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But the creation, not the artist.
Yeah, I remember her from the brief like live action show with Saban. But I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess she ended. Yeah, she did end up in the animated show. Man, there's just so many versions.
It's
of
like when
the
female Eminem came out.
For a second, that my brain was a little sluggish, and I thought there was a female rapper Eminem, and I was like, "Wait,
it took me a second there too."
Oh yeah, no, she was hot. They really, for some reason, they really wanted us to really be
sexually confused.
Yeah, like, oh, I want to eat her, but
Lola
also,
Bunny.
Yeah.
I want to eat her and eat her. Anyways, Eric. So who are your top favorite villains then?
Obviously the Shredder. I would say Shredder, Baxter Stockman, Krang, and the Rat King in that particular order.
Ooh.
But there are many others.
But why in that particular
order? Shredder just because he's the OG.
Right.
He was there in the original like comic book series. They didn't think too far ahead because they killed him pretty much in the first story arc. But they brought him back, and you know, he's just this cool, iconic character. I actually have an animation cell of the original series of the Shredder at my home. But yeah, you can't do the Turtles without the Shredder because it's equal parts menacing while being goofy. which is kind of what the whole Ninja Turtles lore is. Krang, because he's the second OG in a way, because he's just a weird hybrid of, like, there's this race of, like, brains that try to take over the world, and sometimes they're evil, sometimes they're not, sometimes they end up being the Shredder in a robot suit. It's just a little bit, it's so weird and messy, but super cool. Baxter Stockman goes from, in the comic, in the original comic, being this African-American mad scientist.
Yes.
To this Doc Brown, like, Weasley-looking mad scientist in the 80s show.
Boo.
To a mutant fly.
Yeah.
To back to being an African-American scientist who ends up bodiless and has, like, all kinds of, like, cybernetic robot enhancements. To now, in the current IDW run, he's back to being, like, an African-American genius. Yeah. And he has a horde of, like, robotic, not just the Mousers, which have always been a constant with him, but going back to his fly roots, and has, like, cybernetic fly mutants that are at his command. So it's kind of nuts. The Rat King, the connection with Splinter from the 80s cartoon, just being able to control rats is weird. But in the current IDW series, I love the IDW series because, you know, I'm old. I'm old, and it's a little bit more mature. And now the Rat King is now part of this weird godlike pantheon of endless immortal beings that just try to, you know, kind of like Loki in a way in the Marvel universe. And he's trying to just screw with humanity. And it's super fun and weird. And, he's like the Pied Piper of Hamelin of lore.
I was going to say, did you see this Baxter Stockman Funko Pop of
him
in his fly form?
Oh, I did not see that.
Isn't that so cool?
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny the things that you latch onto when you're a black nerd. But that was the one thing I remember was Baxter was black.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, man, they got this black scientist dude. He's a bad guy, but it's cool because he's like, he's a brother.
Yeah.
But I do remember the fly version, and I think he was still black in this version, too, of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle video game, because you see that he's the first boss you go up against. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. Also, I, like, played that nonstop because my stepbrother had that for the Genesis. And so we just would keep playing.
That one in Turtles in Time.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, so good.
I totally forgot about that.
So good. By the way, Bebop and Rocksteady is my favorite, like, bumbling idiot duo of all time.
They just look cool too.
Yeah. They look cool too. You know, I'm one of those fans that ship them. So it's super fun. Like, they're my favorite.
Hey, I bet we can find some of that on Tumblr.
I'm sure there's 100%. Many a DeviantArt page dedicated to such a thing.
So talk to us about some of these lesser known villains. What would be, like, your top?
The vast majority of these.
Five.
Yeah. The vast majority of these are from the 80s series. Which, you know, they're like, okay, it's for kids, so we don't have to think too hard. And they really didn't. It just seemed to work. And a lot of them are kind of ripoffs of other things in pop culture. One such thing is Mr. Og, who is essentially Mr. Mixelplick, but you can't use the term Mr. Mixelplick. And he just changes and alters reality and just messes with the Ninja Turtles and has goofy puns. Because that's how that cartoon series rolls. The Gribbix, they just, one of the writers or a whole team of them just saw Gremlins or The Trouble with Tribbles and decided to merge it together and create this cute little thing that, you know, transforms into this, like, little bear, like, monster with antenna.
It looks like Fozzie Bear and, like, a Porg or something combined.
Yeah, and the original form is kind of like a teddy bear mixed with a snork.
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's much more spot on.
And it's and then they got, there's Fripp the Polarisoid. Okay, kids, back in the day before digital photos were a thing, they had Polaroid cameras. Which you would take a picture and then all of a sudden it would develop right in front of you and you have to shake it, like the song says, in order to see it. And this alien, the whole premise of this episode is Fripp, the Polarisoid, goes on vacation and he just takes pictures of Earth with his camera, and his camera just absorbs and takes in whatever he takes a picture of and places it into an alternate dimension that he could just look at. And that sounds kind of scary, but it's kind of hard when he looks and dresses like a tourist
And he talks with a voice just like this.
Oh, yeah, really?
The entire time.
The canned, weird, like, almost kind of Jewish racist.
Yeah.
The Edwin. Like, oh, no. I'll take a photo.
Oh, there's a character like that. I forgot, because I like the actor that does it, but in Lilo and Stitch,
yeah.
That alien, the one-eyed alien.
Oh,
yeah.
Kevin McDonald.
Is he the one that,
from Kids in the Hall.
He does. Yes, he does.
Oh, God.
That sounds like... No, there's a couple of ones that sound like that.
Yeah, it's just like in Looney Tunes and all that. They just take, like, these old-timey voices, stock voices from old Hollywood people, and they just do their bad impression of them, and all of a sudden it's a new voice for a character.
100%.
Yeah. So...
I was like, I'm looking up on IMDb. Did Kevin McDonald do the voice of this Polarisoid?
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. Oh, he was in Angry Beavers. Oh, and Cow and Chicken.
Oh, yeah.
I'm learning so much.
He has a nice high-pitched tone, that Kevin McDonald. But yeah, there's just so many in the old series. At one point, you know, everyone knows that Shredder or Krang or some version or duo of them are kind of the main big bads of the series. But in the original, they took a back seat in the later years in favor of Lord Dreg, who was actually kind of scary looking for a kid and had this, you know, deep, powerful voice and is a weird bug-like alien. And it just kind of things took a darker turn in the original series.
Well, you were talking about how you're old and how you came in.
Yes, thank you.
At which iteration of the Ninja Turtles were you introduced in? Because it's fun, because I feel like this is very similar to Power Rangers, mm-hmm. where depending on when you were born, you were introed into a different version of this IP.
Right. I was introduced to the cartoon, the 1987 series back in the day. Yeah, I was like 3 years old or something like that, 3-4 years old. And just absorbed it then. And then growing up, I subscribed to the Archie Comics version because that was the kid-friendly, safe version. It was the first comic book I ever subscribed to because back in the day, you were able to do comic books via subscription and get them in the mail.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I've just kind of been married to the franchise ever since, watched all the movies, read all the older books as I got older, and... Yeah, the more mature stuff. And then the 2003 series came out back when I was in like high school or college. And then, yeah, I just kept following it because I don't know. The good thing is that a lot of these newer versions of the Turtles lore and franchise are written by fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making, well, what would I do with this?
Yeah.
And thus it makes it appealing to me because it's being written by my peers and people that I grew up with the franchise. So it's still kid friendly. At least all the television shows are, but there's still a little bit of sophistication. Like Danny, you were talking about Batman, the animated series. A lot of it has a lot of great plot and you know, there's a little bit of silliness in story in both the 2003 and Flash Forward and in the Nickelodeon runs, but it's not as cheesy and just, as much as I love the original series, a lot of episodes you don't need to see. There's a lot more plot and character development in the newer stuff.
Well, yeah, it's funny that you were saying for fans, you know, by fans, mm-hmm. because that's something we touched on the fan films episode where, yeah, and I feel like that is a constant that goes through, and I think we talked about this in the MCU too. When you have a connection to the source material, then you're going to want to produce the best version of it. Like I have a friend who works on Ben 10, and she was saying how much she liked the design of the monsters on there. So of course, her big fun challenge for herself is how cool she could make these new monsters and the new reboot of Ben 10 is. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's where you get things like, you know, Batman and Robin and Batman, when you remember Tim Burton said he's never read a Batman comic. And I feel like he was saying that almost bragging, but mm-hmm. you could tell when you watch it, it was like, no, yeah, we know you didn't. That's why you have Catwoman looking like a BDSM, you know.
Yeah, like a dominatrix. Yeah.
It's like...
And oddly enough, she continued to look like a dominatrix after that movie.
Yeah. But you know, you when you have an attachment to it, you almost want to honor the work that you're doing versus, and we as creators, you know, as creators, we want to create what we want to create. Mm-hmm. And unless we have an attachment to what we're creating when we're working from a source, then we're going to want to do our thing with it. But if you're a fan of it, you're going to want to honor what you're doing. You're not going to be worried about what you think should go, and you're going to worry about what's going to be the coolest thing? What's going to be the best? And I find that that's what makes, you know, the IDW series, people have been hailing it for since it came
really,
back.
It's really
and
good.
I think that's the reason right there.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that there's also room for what you were saying about people wanting to put their own mark on it. Like this upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series couldn't be more different. April O'Neil is a person of color. Raphael is now the oldest Ninja Turtle and has tonfas instead of his sai. And just the dynamics are different. And it's just kind of, it's cool because we now live in a world in which if you like the old corny, like 1980s show, it's still there. You can still watch it. If you like the kind of a hybrid of stuff, the 2003 series is there. If you want something CG and new, the 2012 series is there. If you want something more contemporary and sophisticated and adult, IDW comic book series is there. And now there's this brand new thing that is still a love letter to the original sources, but is twisted and made it its own thing for a modern era and a new generation of fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a rational person, and of course you think that. But that is not the way fans think of it. No matter how
Thundercats?
Much. Thundercats? Thundercats, Ghostbusters, the new Power Rangers movies, anything that taps into their source, people claim ownership
well,
of
if
it.
Well, that's because they destroyed all the original material
so
to never
be
seen
it.
Ever again, right?
Yeah. This sounds
that's
like
why,
a...
that's why people are mad, correct?
I really didn't know that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had that issue, but are you saying that they also have that issue along with Star Wars and every other franchise?
Well, I don't even want to give these opinions because I like to think of these opinions as fringe opinions, even if they're not. Mostly because the internet is so niche. You can find anything for anyone. That's why it's funny when people tell me that they think Reddit's a horrible place. And it's like, oh, no, you craft your Reddit. Create an account and Reddit will be beautiful. But there still
are
fringe things. And the crappiness, I like to call it the darkness, the negativity, will creep into your fandoms too because you'll have this like loud minority that wants to shout about things. Here's the thing with nerd culture. For a long time, it was a thing that you did and only you cared about and not many people cared about it. Some people were made fun of liking the things that they've liked, and it was just a fringe thing. And you've grown to be okay with that. You've grown to be okay with being one of a very few people, especially like before the era of the internet when you can connect with the thousands of people who actually like the thing.
Yeah. You were the other.
Yeah. But like in your community, you usually were a fringe offset person. And that became your personality. That became who you were because, you know, no one else liked it. Sometimes you were teased about it. So then fast forward to times like now when nerd culture is booming, the internet has allowed us to find out that actually a lot of people like it. But I think people are not looking at it from that kind of big picture look. They're looking at it as like, oh, I've already known this is cool and you're just figuring out now, which is why you get the gross things like people quizzing other people, especially women.
Gatekeeper stuff.
Yeah, gatekeeper.
The gatekeeping thing is absurd to me because I don't think you're an actual fan if you gatekeep anyone.
Oh, 100%.
A real fan would be excited about someone new being interested in their fandom. Like you would want to share that love of this thing that you grew up with someone else. It would excite you to have someone come in and, oh, they don't know this. Like, you know, I grew up on DC Comics. I didn't really grow up on Marvel Comics. And so I had a friend of mine that was like, oh, you can borrow mine if you want to. Like, here's a great place to start. I'm like, that is someone who loves their fandom so much that's like, you can borrow my stuff because I know you'll love it if you read this. Like, that to me is a real fan. Someone that gatekeeps is not a real fan.
Well, it's just like with me growing up, I know the topic is Ninja Turtles, but Batman. I was introduced to the character through like Justice League cartoons and all that. And then some older fan is hip to me about the 1960s TV show and just showed me a different layer of fandom. And then someone else showed me a different layer of fandom. So it's what's cool about Ninja Turtles is that, like, you know, I have a bunch of, you know, nieces, nephews and all that. They're going to grow up with this newer stuff. And I'm going to ask them questions about that. The cool thing about modern fandom is that it's going past through different generations, and that now I could share with them, if they're interested, the 1980s TV show or the late 2000s or the mid 2000s TV show that they haven't seen because they weren't even born yet.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny. I feel like this is just like a situation that happened to me. So I was getting my hair cut by my barber, and one of my friends saw me there. And I was, oh, man, you've been coming here? He's like, oh, you've been coming here? And like, I jokingly was like, yeah, no, I've been trying to keep it a secret. And my barber got so mad. But I think about that a lot, how that's a lot about fandoms, where it's like, you're over here trying to keep it a secret, this thing that you like, and trying to keep it for yourself, when really the creators would love for more people to, because that's how they get the money and the support to create more things. So being a gatekeeper, I think it is true. You're not a real fan because you're not supporting the person who's making this thing you like so much when you want it to be just you with it.
Yeah, it's like a really selfish way to look at someone else's art.
Yeah.
Like, that's the truth of it, is that a lot of fans think, and you know, I'm talking as a fan, like, I am obsessive over certain fandoms that I grew up with, but I don't want to keep anyone out. And if someone's a casual fan, that doesn't affect me in any way, nor does it bother me in any way. It's so I never feel the need to comment on a post or put someone in their place about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just frustrating to me. It's like, I don't know. Here's another thing, too, is that I feel like, I don't know if we talked about this on the Marvel episode, but for people who are so obsessed with superhero culture, people who are so obsessed with all these superhero Marvel DC shows, when given the opportunity to be a hero, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, when given an opportunity to actually act like the heroes you are so obsessed with, none of the Jedi are going to write racist things to Kelly Marie Tran. Like, you don't follow your own fandoms. You know, you don't follow your own heroes and the characters you look up to. They would be embarrassed of you.
Well, it's funny, because that's why, and this is where we'll take a interesting tangent out of just almost philosophy, but I think that's what comes with justice. I think when people think they're doing a justice, the thing might seem bad, but because they're doing it for the right reason, it absolves them from being a real duty head instead of another word I might use. But but you know, and that's where things get messy, because it's like, no, if you're doing something wrong, you're doing something wrong. It doesn't matter if you think you're doing it for the right reasons. Maybe you should, you know, reevaluate the way you're doing it. And if you really do, if something makes you so mad, if you really do think that this new Star Wars ruined Star Wars, then guess what? Just don't watch it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying that in the like, then don't watch it. I'm saying, like, if you really think so, then speak with your dollars. And maybe that'll give you the change that you want. But if you're constantly, you can't sit there and convince yourself that all these people who are enjoying it, who are supporting it, are crazy. That's insane to think that you're the only one who has the right opinion about a piece of art. Art is subjective. Sometimes it's not for you, and it may not be for you.
Yep.
So go back and watch the original trilogy and let the people who are really enjoying this new trilogy enjoy that. Because you know what? There are people who are diehard fans about the prequel trilogy. And as across the board panned,
it blows my mind, but good for them.
Aren't they exciting to them? But they're exciting to encounter, because you're like, I can't believe that you found something so exciting from those films.
It's cool when someone's yuck is someone's yum somehow.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I also just, I want to preface this in general with everything that we talk about on this podcast, is that the world is such a scary, dark, tragic, painful, horrific place, that if someone finds joy in a cartoon or someone finds joy in a film, for the love of God, let them enjoy it.
Yeah. You're here.
Like, seriously, it's such a scary world. It has been a scary world, but if someone, these were the fandoms that a lot of us escaped to, you know, like, let people enjoy something. And if you got to enjoy something when you were little, maybe it's time that baton is passed on to younger generations. I'm sorry that Thundercats is no longer just marketed towards you. Maybe before you even see an episode.
Wait, and that 80s cartoons, it doesn't exist anymore, right? That's gone?
Well, what's been funny is I saw someone point out, because people were like, it needs to be serious and da-da-da-da-da-da. That existed. They did do
they
a
did
serious
Thundercats
cartoon, and it didn't do well enough to keep going.
So it was good. It was artistically great, but it sadly got passed on. But it existed is the point.
Oh, yeah. Well, and something that this guy in this, like, and normally I don't like the ranty takedowns of nerdy things by other nerds.
Right.
But he did a real good job of pointing out that Thundercats was a show created to sell toys.
Yep.
So as He-Man's. And as we learned earlier in this episode, Ninja Turtles. And when you do that, the plot isn't all there. It's just enough to enthrall kids. And then that much. So there isn't that much lore within, you know, of course there were comics and spinoffs that might have built that lore up in the meantime. But guess what? That's your medium. That's what you need to zero in on, because they're making this new Thundercats roar for an audience that's not you. Because as much as people rag on Teen Titans Go because they like the original Teen Titans, that show is doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
That show has no
problems.
Can I double down
mm-hmm. on something? And mind you, I'm a nerd. I love all these things that we're talking about heavily. Just follow me on Twitter and all that. We'll get to plugs later. But if your life is so good that your biggest beef is a children's cartoon isn't the way you would have done it, how blessed are you?
Yeah.
How blessed are you?
But you actually just reminded me of something to where I was
making
the greatest
point. There are other problems, man.
Yeah. But you know how I was saying how it became people's identity?
Yeah.
I think that's where it becomes such a touchy thing for some people, because people have built their whole identity around a living art, an art that's constantly evolving, that when it changes, to them it feels like it's changing them. Like, it's like, I'm not this person. This is not the person I wanted to be. I wanted to be the version of the person. And it's like, that's why you don't make your fandom your life. That's why you don't make your whole personality around a piece of art or nerddom, because if it's not your art, you don't have control over it. So at any moment, it could change.
Well, your role as a fan, if you closely identify with it, because it could be hard. Because, you know, I was, you know, growing up, I was the wrestling guy and all that. So people talk to me about that. And, you know, there's some newer stuff that I'm not a fan of. But people can come to me and I can show them, hey, this is, you like this now and all that? I got something to show you.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that you nurture the new fans in order to appreciate the older stuff. And guess what? You end up appreciating what they appreciate, because you're looking at it from, instead of looking at it from your older glasses or whatever you want to put it. I keep saying old. I'm in my 30s. I'm not that old anyway.
Oof. People said grandpa over here.
Yeah, grandpa here. Anyway, but they can revitalize your fandom, because you're either revisiting the stuff that you loved in the past, or you're looking at this newer stuff with a different perspective and having a better appreciation for it and not feeling not feeling that you're attacked, but you're welcomed by this new thing.
I know. And if you like that old stuff, boy, do I have some news for you. For the low price of $9.99, you can get WWE. You can get a WWE Network.
There you go.
Or New Japan World. But anyway.
Before we close out, Eric, who's your favorite Ninja Turtle?
Oh, boy. Raphael Leonardo.
Nice.
No, I grew up loving Leonardo, but as I got older, I had a bigger appreciation for Raphael, because that's how my personality shifted over time.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Iffy, I forgot, who would you say currently, who are you feeling like today?
Oh, man, today I would say, you know, Leonardo, you know, he has the two blades, you know, everyone likes it, but I've always been like a Raph type of guy.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
You know, that the anger.
The bad boy. So you're a Vegeta and you're just...
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's the one
deep
step.
Down.
That's the one step I'll take
the,
for Vegeta.
The shell kicker of the group.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
Today I feel like Splinter. That's who I'd want to be like. Eric, where can everyone catch you?
Everyone can just follow me on Twitter at Eric W. Barnes, ERIKWBARNES, for just jokes, where I'm going to do shows, and just general commentary on nerdy stuff.
Awesome. I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez. It's MSDANIFERNANDEZ. Don't forget to follow us on all the social medias at Nerdificent. That's on Instagram, on Twitter. You can also catch us on Facebook. We do reply to our messages, and we try to reply to all of our tweets. There we go. don't slide. I don't think you can slide in there. Although we did have, actually, when Infinity War came out, we wanted to talk to everyone without posting spoilers. And so we did make a private group, and there were several people in there, and that was pretty fun for all of us to kind of talk about Infinity War in there. So maybe we'll do that with another movie coming up, hopefully soon. Yeah.
And you can catch me at IfyWadiWay, IfyNWADIWE, on Twitter and Instagram. IfD's on Twitch. A lot of the nerd fam's been coming through, dropping, Fatal Baptist, drop that sub. I'm going to shout you out again. You drop subs, I'm going to shout you out on the cast.
What I did want to say is Ify and I will both be at Anime Expo, and we will also be doing some stuff with our friends at Funimation at Lucky Strike. And then we will also both be on a panel together at Comic-Con. So that'll be Friday. I think we're in the library, the auditorium library. We'll probably mention it, but I believe our panel is at 4 p.m. It's going to be about geek podcasting, and we have some of our friends over at Hyper RPG are also going to be on that as well. So if you are at San Diego Comic-Con, if you don't know what San Diego Comic-Con is or what Comic-Cons are in general, please, or you just want more info about it, listen to our Comic-Con episode. It was dope and killer. And we also talked about what goes on at the after parties. But yeah, we will be on a panel together. And we'll also be announcing our own con appearances. There we go. That sounds really gross. I hate saying that. We'll be announcing where we'll be at the con, so you can catch us there. And as we always say,
stay nerdy, friends.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.